Hey, hi everybody, I'm Bob, I'm a compulsive overeater. Hello. This afternoon we're going to start by talking more about sponsorship, specifically being a sponsor, and then we're going to talk a little bit about service. The exercise at lunch was wonderful, and thank you Susan and everyone for putting that together, talking about sponsorship and the great mix that we had. That's something that I didn't experience, and you know, sharing about how to sponsor, I didn't have that experience. So getting that experience, no matter where you are in your program, was a wonderful thing to have. And you may not get that again, to have sponsors at the table with people who need to be sponsored, who, or just regular people in program, and how and non-how. It was a beautiful thing. So that was a great way to have lunch together. I guess I'm going to go right back to the Lifeline magazine. This will be the last time. I'm not about to read everything to you, but one other thing struck me about why I sponsor and what it means to me. This is on page 13 again of the June 2010 Lifeline, and it reads, "The gift of recovery is like a lake that must flow in and out to stay clean. If it does not do this, it becomes stagnant. If I'm all get and no give, I won't keep what I get. My inflow is working the program. My outflow is service and passing it on." So why sponsor? You know, why is that an important part? It seems like a simple question. You know, it really is the backbone of OA to have people to go to sponsor. You know, I know I would not have worked the steps if I didn't get a sponsor. I proved that to myself by the first 4 months that I was in program. I just floundered. I didn't know what to do. Going to meetings wasn't enough for me. Making up some makeshift diet, you know, food plan, which I called my food plan, wasn't enough for me. Until I actually worked the steps. And I, again, being a shy introvert, not the type of person that's going to go up and ask questions like we were able to do at lunch today, just of a sponsor, you know, ask questions of what type of foods to eat and how, you know, what's a sponsor supposed to do for you. I didn't know. So getting a sponsor really was key to say, okay, now what do I do? It was funny when I got my sponsor, I was like, okay, what next? I got a sponsor. I was just so excited. And he said, call me tomorrow morning. Okay, call you what? I mean, when do I call you? What do I call? What do I do when I call you? I didn't know. I was such a newbie about it all. And he said, we'll talk about it then. I'm like, okay. So we had a nice conversation. And the first thing was making the phone call. You know, and the next thing was worrying about what the food, you know, that I needed to eat. And then the next thing was doing the steps. We kind of worked at it gradually. And that's what I would recommend, you know, for anyone who is ready to sponsor, is that start gradually. Because when I first started sponsoring, I think I scared some people away because I was like, and this, and then that, and then this, and then you do that, and then we're going to be doing this. And then I laid the whole, you know, 4 years, you know, out of their lives, and it scared them away, you know. And I think, you know, keep it simple, stupid is a really good thing to follow when you're a sponsor. And remembering that it's about the listening more than the directing. You know, you're not directing somebody's life. We're not manipulating anything. All we're doing is being a guide. So putting less pressure on ourselves certainly helps. So I got to give it away to keep it. And so when I first started sponsoring, being a house sponsor, the only thing that I knew was to do these 30 questions to go through the first 3 steps. And that's what I did, you know. So when I sponsor somebody new, I give them these 30 questions. And we start working the steps together by answering. They would answer a question, and then I would request that they would read it to me at an off time, not in our morning call, but maybe in the evening or maybe on the weekend. We'll do a few questions together. So I would listen, you know, and not comment, but listen to what they shared. And, you know, I remember writing my questions, and it was very powerful for me because I was a very diligent student, if you want to call it, when I was a diligent sponsee. I put it on myself. My sponsor didn't do it. Well, he would ask. If I didn't answer a question every 2 days, he would ask, "You're doing any writing lately?" You know, and sometimes I just say I'm not too busy. Other times I really was just procrastinating. So, but I tried to do a question every day or every other day. And I got through those 30 questions pretty quickly that way. The expectations now that I'm a sponsor is that everybody's going to do that, and I say, oh, whoa, you know, I can't have that expectation on my sponsees. I really can't. But I just keep gentle nudging. But it meant so much to me to have someone else listen to my writing. It was a share. I was giving a share. I was telling something very important about my life, and when I was reading what I was writing. And half the time, I would forget what I wrote, so I would actually hear myself again when I was like, wow, that was good, Bob. You did, wow, that was amazing. It really was. It was good for me. It was very therapeutic to say I didn't know that, you know, I was such a good writer. Who knew? You know, and it was very good to get that out of me, but also to share it with somebody else. Not that it was a fifth step type of situation, but just to share my life with them. And it was now important for me as a sponsor to just as much to listen. It's easy to say, yeah, but, or maybe you could be doing this, or no, as a sponsor now your role, Bob, is to shut up and listen. And that's what I started doing, you know, and then when asked to give feedback. And that's what I started doing. So it was great to take on that role now and to now work through the steps. So that's what I do. After 30 questions and 45 days in the HOW program back in New Jersey, anyway, what we do is when ready, the sponsor will have what's called a step up and have a step up ceremony. So it's a very nice candlelight ceremony. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing, a great thing to witness, and it's a great thing for the person to go through themselves, and then they become a sponsor themselves. You know, so that's kind of how I sponsor the first three steps for a person that is a HOW sponsor. Now, I sponsor people that aren't HOW. And then, so how do you sponsor them? Basically, you know, this becomes a very important tool for me. And even after the first three steps of the HOW program, I use the 12-step workbook of Overeaters Anonymous. And the questions in there are great. So what I love about, you know, OA is that there's always some tools you can use even as a sponsor. One of the bigger tools that you can now use is are pamphlets. And the pamphlets that are, and I believe they are out on a literature table, a guide for sponsors and a guide to the 12 steps for you and your sponsor. And basically these are things, if you are thinking about being a sponsor, you should pick up and read. This one, the guide to the 12 steps for you and your sponsor, was just recently revised a month ago. And it will be going out to reprint by the end of the year. They believe they're going to have them. When that comes, get it. Absolutely. Wonderful, wonderful. I got to read the manuscript and we voted on it. And it did pass last month at World Service Business Conference. This pamphlet goes through every step, and with you and your sponsor, you can answer questions. You know, they're not HOW questions, they're just questions on every step. So you're able to use that with your sponsee and with your sponsor. So it's a wonderful, wonderful new piece of literature that was just released. So that's something for us to use. You know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel, which I love. So when am I ready to be a sponsor? You know, I told you how it's done and HOW. But that doesn't apply to everyone. Basically, it's a decision between you and your sponsor. You know, is how what I've heard. And 30 days may be enough for you to have 30 days of abstinence, and you're ready to be a sponsor. You know, that's really, it's going to be a decision between you, your higher power, and your sponsor. It really comes down to that. When I sponsor, I look for a person who is working the steps and working them, you know, working them well, and they're progressing through the steps. My personal opinion would be a sponsor should be have done the first three steps, and at that point they're ready to sponsor somebody else. They've made the decision to turn their will and their lives over to the care of a higher power. They can share that level with another. That doesn't mean that you have to have three steps done to be a sponsor, because all you need to do is to be able to share your experience, strength, and hope up to the level that you have. You know, if you're on the second step and you have somebody who's a brand newcomer and it's decided between you and your sponsor that you're able to sponsor this newcomer, so be it. You know, what is wrong with that? You know, so the issue isn't really more of where are you? It's kind of, you know, do you have the ability, you know, do you have the willingness to share with others where you are? I had a lot of fear when I became a sponsor. You know, I was like, wow, I can't do this. I'm barely new myself. I'm only in program and for less than a year or 6 months or whatever it is. So I didn't feel that I was ready to sponsor anybody, let alone somebody who had was in program for longer than I was. You know, so that was a big fear for me, to have something worthwhile to share with somebody else. Similar to what I'm doing now and up here speaking before you, I had a fear of that too, that I didn't have anything worthwhile sharing. And God told me, yes, you do. Yes, you do. So God is also telling me as a sponsor is that it's you know, I have a responsibility. I have a responsibility to work all three sides of that triangle. And the triangle of service is working with others. How do we work with others? We work the steps. And what's the way to do that? Sponsor. So to me, that is my responsibility. I need to sponsor. I need to give it back in order to keep what I have. If I'm not working all three sides of that triangle, I'm going to fall. It's the three legs of the stool. If I'm only sitting on two legs, I'm going to fall down. So that's what it comes down to. I have to work all three legs. I have to work all three sides, whatever you want to call it. I need to work it all. And that means being a sponsor as soon as I'm ready. There is a fear I have in program itself is that we have a shortage of sponsors, especially in our area. I'm assuming you might have it here. You know, I'm sponsoring too many people. And when that happens, I'm not giving my sponsees enough attention, I believe. You know, because to work the steps, you got to devote some time to it. So that is my concern, is that if I take on too many sponsors, that I'm not giving enough time and effort for the development of those who need it. Also, if I'm carrying someone who is not working the steps and is not doing service, it is my obligation, I believe, to OA as a whole to think about firing or dropping that sponsee. Because I am taking up a precious space that could be a newcomer could come in, and somebody who really, really wants to work this program. Besides that, if a sponsee is not willing to work the program with me, maybe it would be a wake-up call to drop that sponsee. And maybe what it is that they needed that in order to find someone else, work with somebody else, and actually, you know, take the program a little more seriously. I do believe in that. I mean, it mentions that in the big book as well. So that's on page 96 of the big book. It talks about, and to me it's detachment, is that if a person isn't ready, move on. And it may actually help the person to take their program more seriously. So, and also, if someone's not working a program very, very hard, and maybe it may hurt your abstinence, and you need to look at that too. You know, if a sponsee is hurting your abstinence, then I also believe that's something you need to look at. But I don't need to make excuses either. I don't need to say I can't sponsor because of this and that and that. And that is really the difference, is that what am I really being opening myself up to other people? Am I giving the proper time that I can be devoting to this? Because what's worse, to take on a sponsee, to give a little bit of your time, even though you think you might not have it, or is it worse for a newcomer to be floundering and not have anybody to work with. In my opinion, and it's only mine, it's more important to have that newcomer, to have somebody to work the steps with. Before they leave, before they walk out to their next binge and maybe never come back. So that, you know, is my personal dilemma, is how I need to look at the way that I sponsor. So it is so important to give back. Sharon shared this with me, and I said, can I borrow it? It's just very simple phrases. When you sponsor, you need, you know, when I sponsor, I need to have share with love and tolerance, you know, with them. What Sharon shared with me took that to the next level. It says, honesty without compassion is cruelty. Compassion without honesty is enabling. And both of them hurt. Both of them hurt us in different ways. So a sponsor needs to be both honest and compassionate. So, because if I am an enabler, I'm not helping my sponsees, absolutely not. If I'm allowing what they're doing and saying it's okay to do what you're doing and to not give positive feedback and to turn what they're doing into a positive direction in a compassionate way, you know, then I'm not helping them. But I also, you know, don't need to be so critical about what they're doing and then drop them on a dime when they do one thing that isn't something that I would do, because it's not about me. But that's what happens, I think, way too often in program, is that somebody's, you know, the ego's getting away and the pride, and it's hurtful. Well, they didn't call me on this appointed time. You know, I can't do that. I mean, I can't drop somebody because they didn't call me exact time. I haven't even asked them why they didn't do that, you know. I do ask my sponsees to call me every single day. And when they don't, sometimes they do end up on my 10-step resentment list. And that's, you know, that's what happens. But it doesn't mean I have to, you know, turn around and berate them. I can pray about them and I can pray that they do call the next day. We had a question about at our table about sponsoring someone in relapse, in and out of relapse, and what do you do? So I have sponsored someone, I am sponsoring right now, who has been in and out. And instead of dropping them, I have worked with them. But I do feel at a certain point, maybe it's time that they need to try a new sponsor. But at this point in time, the way that I deal with that, if somebody hasn't called me in, I usually use a rule of thumb, 2 days, I call them. And because they may or may not be in relapse, they may just be, I'm sorry, things got busy. But the other thing is, they may actually have picked up. I don't know the difference until I call. So I make the call, see what's up. Sometimes they call back and say, oh, I'm so glad you called because I was in a very bad place, you know, and they did pick up. So again, we just start right back up. I say, today's a new day. You're abstinent right now, right? You know, we can work it. So that, again, the patience, love, and tolerance is something that I needed to show, because I can be, you know what? That may be his last relapse. In two different ways, I mean that. It could be his last relapse, that he never ever comes back to program, and maybe that call saved his life. And it also could be that it's his last relapse, that he's decided that that was it. He's hit bottom, and he really, really wants to work the program, and this is it for him. And that he's going to be, you know, abstinent from here on for the rest of his life. Who knows? But if I didn't make the call, you can be damn well sure it could have been the first relapse. I mean, the first way of relapse was used, that he could be going to his demise and leave program entirely. So, I do want to say that a sponsor is not a friend. You know, I'm friends with my sponsees, but that's not my role as a sponsor. My role as a sponsor is to be a guide, you know. And if I'm letting that a friendship get in the way of sponsorship, then I'm not doing my job also. You know, I need to detach when it comes to that. And I can be a friend to someone, but if I take that too far, then I'm not helping the development of that person. Again, my goal, like my sponsor, is to get that person to be a sponsor. One, to maybe take some of my sponsees away, or maybe to sponsor me someday. You know, that's my goal. You know, and I don't think that's a great goal. I mean, whether you want to call it selfish or not, I think it's definitely helping our program. We have a shortage of sponsors, and I think the fear of sponsorship is so great that if we can just talk to people and say, you know what, it's not that bad, it's not that hard. You know, I think it's just like, I don't think I could ever be that person. And it's also, you know, being a sponsor, it's a responsibility to myself now that I don't pick up, that I stay abstinent. And that's so important to me. I think it's also might be an excuse for someone to, you know, maybe not keep their abstinence because they feel that, I hope that that's not the case, but it's something I've thought about, is that maybe someone knows they're nearing completion of a certain step, or knows that they're gonna, you know, if they have to go so far that they're eventually gonna be asked to be a sponsor, and maybe they pick up for that reason. I don't know. I hope that that's not the case. But it certainly could be that we need to encourage each other to be sponsors because we need each other, you know. And I guess lastly on sponsorship, there's a lot that can be talked about. You know, when I'm a sponsor and I do sponsor non-how people, you know, you just have to share your experience, strength, and hope of what you know. I sponsor non-how people, and when they ask me to sponsor them, I may say yes. I do talk to them. First thing I ask them is, "What food plan? Do you have an established food plan?" Because what happens is that, and it's okay, I don't. You know, if they try to commit some foods to me, and that's what they're going to do, that's what I ask them to sponsor them the same way. I don't know what, besides, you know, no sugar, no flour, and weighing and measuring, I don't understand that, and that's okay. So if someone asks me to sponsor them, you know, and if I accept to do so, they have to get expert help, because I can't give them that help. So it's okay to say that to a sponsee. So that's why I'm just trying to bring that out. So if you're considering being a sponsor, I was like, I don't know if I could sponsor a non-how or sponsor a how, it's okay. Because if they want what you have something in you. It may be your spirituality. You know, maybe just the way you carry yourself. You know, the peace that you carry with you. Maybe that's what they want. You know, and maybe if they have to get a second sponsor for their food, so be it. Or maybe they get expert help by going to a nutritionist and saying, this is what my nutritionist gave me, can you just help me follow this plan? It's more about the commitment than it is anything else, remember that. So being a sponsor isn't all that hard. So I guess the last thing I want to say on sponsorship is that there is, I believe it's going to be later this year, there's going to be a new TV show which is going to be coming out that I just heard about at World, when I went to World Service, that they are going to be having a couple who met at an OA meeting and they're compulsive eaters. I thought that's truly amazing. Just a couple of weeks ago, we got an announcement sent around through an email loop that the newspapers in Dear Abby had another mention again of OA, and our 50th anniversary was in the newspapers recently. This is all great stuff. So for our meetings, that means hopefully we're going to get, the word's going to be getting out, we're going to be getting some newcomers, we're going to get some people coming out. So this is the perfect time for you to consider being a sponsor, is why I'm saying that. There's going to be more people coming, we're going to need more sponsors. And if we want those people to stay, they're going to need to get a sponsor. So do what you can between now and then to work the steps to your best of your ability and to become a sponsor. Remember, they're brand newbies. Even if you've been around for 20 days right now, by the time they come in the door, you're going to have more experience, strength, and hope than they will have. There's no doubt about it. And you can share. The biggest thing that I have is that if I don't know, I have a sponsor. I talk to my sponsor, you know, to get help from my sponsees. That's what I did from day one, and I continue to do it. You know, and we talk back and forth now about things. You know, I have a sponsee who's asked me this. What do you think? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? As long as you're not discussing names and breaking anonymity, it's okay to talk issues with other people. So we do that. So do that. Ask other people for help and guidance. And that's a beautiful thing that we can do that. All right, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I just ask you, if you're not a sponsor but you're able to and you think you're, pray on what is blocking you from doing that. Pray and ask for God's help. Ask for someone else's help. Talk to me, talk to another sponsor here. You know, ask for help on what is blocking you from being a sponsor. And maybe, you know, that in the near future you'll be, that willingness will come. Hi, I'm Bob. I'm a compulsive overeater. And we're going to talk about service. Who is doing service at some level, at some shape and form? Would you just raise your hand if you're doing some level of service or have done service? Anybody ever, thank you. Anybody ever help set up chairs? That's service. And I'm putting it that basically because I didn't know what service was. I thought I had to be intergroup chair to be doing service. You know, and service is a great thing. And being a sponsor, it's great to be able to say to my sponsees, you know, it's if you need to put it in these terms and be that strong about it, if you're not doing service and you're not working the steps, then I can't sponsor you. And that's okay for me to say now. You know, service is so important that we need to make it that simple. You know, and service is simple to do, making phone calls to newcomers at a meeting, you know, setting up chairs, doing the literature. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't, as long as we're involved. And you know what? Taking on a service position has kept me coming back to my, and I love doing it because I'm able to smile about it and say, you know what, this makes me, help me keep coming back, you know, and I feel like I'm being useful. And I really am. By doing that, so service has led me in such a wonderful experience for me. What I was told when I thought I couldn't do service at higher levels, and I mean by intergroup level, region level, world service level, I was like, "Wow, you know, this is way above me. I could never do that." And that's what I would say, you know. And again, I was putting a block on myself. Till someone finally said to me, is that, do you have the willingness? Well, yeah, I guess I might, you know. I might be able to do it. Do I have the time? No. No, I never have the time. But we never have enough time. Believe me, we can make that excuse up and down. But I said, again, OA is very important to me. I now feel I have a responsibility to carry the message. If that's true, then do I really have the time? Yeah, I do. Yeah, I can make the time. You know what? It's that important for me to make the time. Then I started using the excuse, am I experienced enough? No, I'm not experienced enough. Never have that experience. Well, you know, God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. And I've heard that many times, and I will share that. And please share that with other people who use that excuse. Because God does not call the equipped. He equips those who are called. He equips the called. So if you are called to do service, if you are asked to do service, maybe it's God's will. Maybe it's meant to be. So think about that the next time you're asked to do service. And I don't say that lightly because I use this weekend as an experience. And I use weekends when people ask me to do a retreat. It's like, got nothing on the calendar. Okay, that's... Okay, maybe God's trying to tell me something, but even more, when I was asked to do service, I would shut it out. I would shut it out more because personally I didn't think I was good enough to do anything again or I had something to give. Now I know better. And because I know better, I can share that with you that you have something to give at any level. And don't be afraid to go to intergroup level too, because everyone there is just like you. You know, being a meeting rep is a big service. Taking the information back to your meeting, that's a huge service. Taking a level position. I took the website and was like, okay, I got into it and I started doing the website. I was liking it. And then I started saying, no one could take this over from me. I'm going to have to keep doing it. Until I said, you know what, that's not true. I started growing and started saying, I can take any position up here and anybody else can take my position. And do it just as well as I did. You know why? Because I can ask for help and they can ask for my help in doing that service position. And it's all about growth, isn't it? So if we don't challenge ourselves to grow and try new things, are we really truly growing? So that was a learning experience for me. I was like, I'm the only one that can do the website, so therefore, you know what? When my term was up, someone else stepped up. Someone else had joined, knew how to do websites, beautiful. You know, thank you, God, for bringing that person in. Another service position that I had stayed vacant. And there's some positions that will stay vacant. But you know what? If I don't leave that position and move on to another one and rotate service, no one's going to take that position. So rotation of service is very important too. Taking on new service positions has been a little daunting for me at times. I love to do service, and I love to share my gifts that God has given me. And sometimes I don't even know what they are sometimes. But I know that I have gifts. I know God's given me many talents. And I'm learning new ones. Speaking is becoming a new one for me. You know, and I love doing it. But I also have to set boundaries. Because what was happening to me is that I was spreading myself way too thin. I was doing way too many things between work. And I don't just do service in OA. I do service in at my church and other things too. And I was... What I had to actually do was ratchet it back in and say, Bob, what is truly important in your life? You know, I now have a purpose-driven life because God is leading me that way. And I really do believe that I have a purpose in life. So if that's true, what are my priorities in my life? And that was a tough question for me to ask, but I had to determine what was most important to me. OA, absolutely, was important to me. Okay, that's one. My family, there's no question. Anything that involves my family. Prior to program, I neglected my family. And I don't want that ever to happen again. Third was my church. So I have three things that if service opportunities come up, I can say yes. Maybe. But if it doesn't have anything to do with those three things, and there are many times I'm asked, I say, you know what? I can't do it. I want to devote my time in these three areas. You know, and that's a beautiful thing for me now. You know, I can say no. Because I had a really, really hard time as a people pleaser about saying no. So that really helped me to set priorities in my life. Because it made time, it made some space, some available time that maybe I could do a service that I had previously said no. So now when asked about OA service, maybe I'll say yes the next time. So that was good for me, you know, making time for the things that I feel are important. You know, on my gravestone, I didn't want it to say what I thought it would have said many years ago when money was my God. I didn't want it to say that here lied, you know, the hardest worker that ever lived. But he wasn't a good family man. And that was something that I didn't... That's not what life's all about for me anymore. It's not. You know, I need money to survive. And I need money and I need a job to have vacation to come out and do wonderful service like this. You know, that's how I treat my job now. And that's a good thing for me. It's healthy. So, service is a wonderful thing. I encourage you all to do some shape or form. I never thought I would be a World Service Business Conference delegate. I never thought I would be a Region 7 delegate, but I am. And I've gone now twice out to World Service. It's a great service. It may not be for everyone, but it is so, so cool to be sitting in the same environment with such strong abstinence and such wonderful, hard-working people. And all care about OA as much as I do. And it's people from all around the country. I have friends in, you know, England, Australia, New Zealand now, and I keep in touch with them. How amazing is that? How amazing is when I came to World the first time last year and I was going to dinner alone. I was like, oh gosh, here I am. The whole fear thing is like, gosh. I walked in the room and there was, hey, come on over. And there were people from all around the world sitting down having dinner. And I got to meet people, and that was a beautiful thing. So nowhere else would I have that experience. I need help making decisions about service and what to do and what not to do. when I got asked the possibility of coming out here, the first thing I did was go home and talk to my service sponsor, who was my wife. I needed help because I didn't know what to do when I'm asked to do service anymore. I don't want to say no, and I don't want to say yes. I'm confused. So I talk it over with her, and basically, if it's not hurting the family by me doing such a thing, and I'm not over thinking things, and more about it was that it was the courage about whether I could do something like this. And that was more of it. When she said to me, my wife now, "Sounds like a great opportunity for you," I was like, "Wait a minute, come on. Now you're making my I have to make a decision now. You're saying it's okay." Sometimes she doesn't say it's okay, and that's good too. But this time she said it was okay, and I said, "Okay, God, now I'm turning it back to you. If this is meant to be, we'll see where it goes. But I'm not shutting the door on it," which was so great for me. Because normally I would say, "Seattle, are you kidding me?" And I'm not, and I didn't, which was great. You know, it is great, and it's great to be here. And if it wasn't for program, I wouldn't be able to be here with you and get such a wonderful experience. So I'll just really close with saying, you know, do some service at some level. You'll be surprised what you get back from it, you know. Whether it is being a sponsor, which is kind of, service and sponsorship are really separate, but being a sponsor is giving service to away. There's no doubt about it. But we can even do more. And so, like I said, you can surprise yourself and find new talents that you thought that you never had. So thanks for letting me share.